right now, we want to turn our focus to the pitch because starting on Sunday, Valor FC will begin their sixth season in the Canadian Premier League. Their coach and general manager, who has always been so gracious with his time whenever we've asked, Philip Dos Santos, joins us now. Philip, how was the off season? And I can only imagine how excited and how optimistic you are going into 2024.
Hey, how are you? It's been a while. It was a long one, a very long off season. It's a long off season. It's a long preseason. So we're excited to get going now.
So as you prepare for Sunday's opener against Vancouver FC, is it 7 or 8 in a row on the road to begin the schedule, Philip?
It's 7 CPL matches, but we also have the Canadian Championship match in the middle of that. So it's going to be 8, maybe even 9 matches on the road, depending on outcomes. So it's something we have to deal with, and we have to look at it as an opportunity as well.
Right. So, as you mentioned, it's been a long off season, and then there's the preseason to get ready. So, as you get set to head off to Vancouver for that first game of the season, what are some things that you're optimistic about, Philip, and what would be the gray area right now, keeping in mind that your team is coming off an 8th place finish in the CPL just a year ago?
Yeah, look, it's we're optimistic. We like the additions that we've brought. I think it's a very new roster. We know how difficult it was for us to get goals last year. I think that defensively the team was, until a certain point of the season, very cohesive. But when you don't score, it starts to weigh on the team and you take a bit more risks, and then you start maybe opening up a little bit more and getting outside of your identity. So for us, it was about making sure that we would solidify what were the good sectors of the squad, maybe add a little bit of experience, add a little bit of quality. And then it was about addressing goal scoring and getting players that would bring us a chance to score in many different ways. We looked at how we would adjust our model, how we would adjust the way the team played, and maybe try to be a bit more effective in which areas we wanted to attack from, and get players that were able and that would give us more guarantees to play the way we want to play. I think that, like in any sport, when you get people with goal-scoring track records, you're in a better place. I think that's something we paid attention to in the offseason.
Right, and looking at your roster, and I think I'm accurate here, Philip, of the 22 players, only 8 are returnees, and I believe half of that total would be midfield. So would it be accurate to say that you were at least pleased with your midfield play last year? And as you've just mentioned, you certainly focused on beefing up the attack. And from that perspective, who are some of the new faces that you expect to produce some goals for Valor FC this year?
Look, I don't like to just single out a player or two. I think that when you look at the variety in which we brought in the offseason, you have players that have a little bit more of that attacking midfield mindset, creative midfielders in a Jordan Faria and a Diogo that we just signed from Portugal this week. Then you have a player like Sean Ondal, who scored goals everywhere he's been, including last season until a certain point in the CPL where he was playing for Vancouver and he was probably their most dangerous player in the attack. And a Jordy Swivel who scored in the Australian League 15 or 16 goals. So we looked at bringing players that have the ability to score and create goal-scoring opportunities. Young players like Abdul Binate, Joe Hansen, we still have Keon Williams, who still contributed for 9 goals between goals and assists last year. So we just like the variety that we have. We like the creativity that we brought. Even in the midfield, we we were able to still maintain a good core. Losing Diego, it was important for us to get players that would allow us to still carry play forward. And then not to forget the return of a healthy Rafa Lee. If he's able to stay healthy, I still think it's a player with very unique qualities in this league.
Right. Philip Dos Santos, the coach general manager of Valor FC, joining us. So how much pressure is there on your squad then, Philip, in light of having to play those first seven league and, of course, one or two other matches to start the year? And also, you know, we received the financial report from the Winnipeg Blue Bombers yesterday. And while the Blue Bombers did well, and I don't know how much of the business side you're involved in, but you're the general manager, so it's kind of all-encompassing. But how much pressure is there to get off to a good start? Because I just get the feeling the Winnipeg soccer community is just itching to have a winner to hitch their bandwagon to.
Yeah, I agree. Look, it would be a lie to say that there's no pressure, but it's a good pressure. It's one that we like to have. I think this is pro sports, and these things are absolutely normal in the game. We understand what's at stake. We understand that this is also a city. I said it earlier in another interview with you look at the Blue Bombers, you look now at the success that the Jets are having, and now it just becomes electric. And it's a city that loves their sport. And I do think that our stadium is a stadium that with a winning team, you could reach the 5, 6, 7+ thousand people, because it's a city that's eager to see a soccer team that's going to succeed, and we're fully aware of that. At the same time, you know, the truth is this, is we all want to win. We all come in every day to succeed. We work very hard, and we know the responsibility that we have. We want to win, and we work for that, and we take that responsibility well. I think that it's something that we can't be afraid of. Now the team needs to be judged through time. I think that, you know, there's a lot of times teams going off to a very good start and they don't reach their objectives, and vice versa. I go with the fact that last year we were 2 losses in the first 10 games, and then it became difficult after that. I think that, you know, judging the team will come at the end. And for us, it's a mentality of all in all the time, going for the 3 points all the time. And at the end, we'll do our math and we'll see where we are. And we hope that through these 7, 8 games on the road, we give enough hope and enough traction to our fans to make sure that on that June 2nd game, the stadium is well composed, and that our fans are back in love with us, and that's what we want to use these games for.
Yeah, because I think it speaks volumes that this club has not been able to crack the playoff nut, if you will, through the first 5 seasons. You still average 3,100 fans a game, which was just under the league average of 3,380 or whatever it was. So, I mean, you were close to maintaining the league average. I can only imagine, you know, what the trench will be like if you can have the kind of a club that you envision, Philip.
Yeah, absolutely. I go back to 2022 when we went through that spell of 3 home games that we won 1-0 each game, and it just got better and better from the first game on the weekend to the Wednesday game to the following game. It looked like it became contagious, and we know what this city wants. We know the type of fans that we have, and there's two ways of seeing it. Either you shy away from the challenge or you embrace it. And I have the energy, the passion, and that's what I try to transmit to the players and the guys that are here. All acknowledge the responsibility that we have, and we're embracing this season with a lot of hope. We like what we've built. We like the characters that we have here, and we want that 12th man coming. The big spell of home games that we're going to have later on.
All right, it all begins on Sunday in Vancouver, and ironically, it'll be Vancouver FC who you host in that first home game of the season on Sunday, June the 2nd. Philip DeSantos, coach, general manager of Valor FC, as always, thanks for the time tonight.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, certainly hope it goes well for you this coming Sunday in Vancouver. We just spoke about the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. They announced their financial report yesterday. It was absolutely glowing. Some thoughts next on just how this club has evolved over the past decade or so. It really is incredible. We now welcome to the sports show the first vice president and the sports director of the Canadian Polish Athletic Club, Inc. of Winnipeg, Mr. Kent Seelan. Kent, thanks for giving us some of your Friday night to talk about this great organization of yours and a very important event that's coming up next month.
Oh, thank you so much. Much appreciated, Ed.
Yes. So, Kent, I guess let's start with talking about the Canadian Polish Athletic Club, because you haven't been around for just a little while. You are celebrating your 70th year of existence here in 2024.
We are. We started out in 1954, and we started out with sponsoring youth in the North Winnipeg area. And CPAC is not limited to just the North End, but we actually sponsor youth and adults from all parts of Winnipeg and southern Manitoba. And through the 70 years, CPAC has sponsored over 16,000 youth. We're very proud of that. We've sponsored them in baseball, football, soccer, hockey, lacrosse, softball, basketball, just to name a few sports. So it's been a labor of love with us in sports. But we're also very proud of our commitment to the community with respect to sponsoring the top academic and athletic awards for graduation ceremonies at Sisler and St. John's High School, Andrew Benarski, Victoria Cross, Isaac Newton Junior High Schools, plus Holy Ghost School as well. We feel that scholastics and sports are really important. If you combine the two of them, you'll actually build a better youth. And our motto is, building youth is better than bending adults.
Oh, I absolutely love that. Building youth is better than mending adults. Who came up with that? Do you know, Kent?
Well, actually, it was back in 1954, and it was actually the founders of the club. They actually came up with it. And back in those days, it was building men. Boys was better than mending men. But we have since changed it with the times sort of thing. And we've been very progressive. We've had some of the top women's teams right from the get-go back in 1954 that we're super proud of, right over the moon with those teams, and that model has changed and been amended for certain.
You know, you talked about, your commitment and your support of Sisler and St. John's and Andrew Minarski and Isaac Newton and, of course, now Holy Ghost. But also you have the Gull Lake Resort, which I guess helps, live with that motto that you just shared with us, building youth is better than mending adults, in a non-sports way. Maybe talk a little bit about what the Gull Lake Resort does that is part of the Canadian Polish Athletic Club, Kent.
Well, the Gull Lake Resort gives us a place to have different events, and it's not just for the CPAC membership, but it has sponsored everything from the Gull Lake Ratepayers Association picnics to a variety of groups that are disadvantaged. So those groups that were disadvantaged have used our facilities, but with the Gull Lake facility, we actually built a 3-acre sports field, tennis courts, basketball courts for youth to participate in. We've remodeled part of our lodge so that we could put all our trophies and memorabilia through the years so people can see it. It's a fantastic resort. It's actually 65 acres. It's beautiful. It's very pristine, and it's well kept by a small core of volunteers who work diligently to keep the resort, which goes back to the 1940s, in pristine shape for the lake and for people throughout the surrounding community at Gull Lake.
Well, and of course, if you've ever been to Folklorama, you will probably have crossed paths with members of the Canadian Polish Athletic Club at the Polish Krakow Pavilion. But I want to get back, Kent, to when you were talking about, because back in the 1950s and 60s, we had, did not have the liberated minds that thank goodness we have today when it comes to women's sport. But, through the 70s and 80s, you had a women's hockey team that was the absolute talk of the province, didn't you?
Yes, we did. They were champs of through thick and thin. They were champs. They represented the province over a decade at the Nationals. The team was just a superb team. We're very proud of the record. I think one season they went 31 wins and one tie. It was just a phenomenal season sort of thing. And they were presented with many Manitoba awards for sports excellence by the Manitoba Sports Directorate Office here of the province. And we had the late Eddie Dearden at many of the different occasions here for presentations, but they were just the absolute delight. They were quite the team to have. They were a team that players looked up to, younger players looked up to, and I really think that it really helped women's hockey develop in the province.
So the other part of this too, Kent, is and as much as it's helping young people certainly become better as they progress in their lives. There are some individuals though who have really stood out who can look back and say thank you to the Canadian Polish Athletic Club for helping get them to where they got to. Can you share some of those names, please?
Oh, for certain. We've coached players like Jason Jakovic, who played for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Toronto Argonauts, and Ottawa Rough Riders. We've had players like Jill Mathis, who is the first person ever to be put into the Women's Hockey Hall of Fame with respect to Manitoba Sports Hall of Fame. She was the first one, so that's a really accomplished person. We've also had Adrian Brown, who is our current longtime president, and he's in the Manitoba Hall of Fame for softball. We've had Keith Guerrier. He recently went into the Baseball Hall of Fame as well. We've had Rick Lavalley. Rick both played baseball and coached with CBAC, and he was with the California Angels AAA team, the Vancouver Canadiens. We've had quite a few. In fact, if we go back in time, we've had people like Elaine Jones, and she's also in the Hall of Fame, and mm-hmm. Faye Finch, and she's in the Hall of Fame too. And they played on some of the top CBAC teams in the 50s and 60s, and those teams had quite a rivalry with the Canadian-Ukrainian Athletic Club, or CUAC. So we've had some really talented people that have come through the organization, quite a few of them, like Rick Lavalley and Keith Guerrier and Adrian Brown, too, are players that not only played for the club, but also are players that went on to coach. In Rick's case, he coached with CBAC, and with Keith, he's been coaching for quite some time within the North Winnipeg area. And that's something that we always tell our players. We like them to take the best things they learn from us. We like them to give back to the community with all those things. And we've had some really talented players that haven't got to the Manitoba Hall of Fame, but they've really given back to the community that we're totally over the moon and proud of.
Right. So I guess the bottom line to our discussion, because we wanted to provide some context for what the Canadian Polish Athletic Club is all about, but it also costs money to fund the club, to do the great work that it has, to maintain the legacy that has existed over these 70 years. And so you have your 70th anniversary dinner coming up next month.
Yes, we do. We have our 70th anniversary banquet. It'll be held Saturday, May 11th. And basically, we're looking and we're inviting all former players, coaches, managers, volunteers, family, friends, etc., to come out to this activity. This event is going to be held at Holy Ghost Parish Hall, which is at 342 Pritchard Avenue, which is right in the heart of the North End. There's information posted on our website, which is the Canadian Polish Athletic Club.com. There's invitations there should someone want to get more details. But should someone want to purchase tickets, it's doodle@mymts.net. That's doodle, which is D-O-O-D-L-E, @mymts.net. Much of our challenge is being to get the word out to the different players, coaches, managers, and all the volunteers here. Most of the records are paper records, as you might imagine. The internet didn't exist, social media didn't exist, so it's been quite a challenge. So we're really quite appreciative of everyone that's been forwarding these invitations. And as I say, you can get it at our website, which is CanadianPolishAthleticClub.com.
Well, Kent, when I first came to Winnipeg, I remember, Bob Irving mentioning many times that he would come and speak at the CPAC banquet. So when you reached out to me earlier on last month and were talking about trying to get the word out, I just remembered how Bob valued your organization and how much he thought of the great work that you and your committee do. So it's our pleasure to try to get that word out. And if you're listening, and you know anybody from the Canadian Polish Athletic Club, or you just want to help out, get the word out. And again, Saturday, May the 11th, and that's CanadianPolishAthleticClub.ca.
.com.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you. Much appreciated, Kelly. We can't thank CJOB more. CJOB has always been a really good sponsor and really helpful with our program, so really, truly appreciate it.
You bet. Our pleasure. Kent Seelan, who is the sport director and the first vice president of the Canadian Polish Athletic Club of Canada. I love that motto. Building youth is better than mending adults. We welcome to the show the coach and general manager of the Pembina Valley Twisters of the Manitoba Major Junior Hockey League, Braden Bernards. Braden, I know it has been busy for you, so I really do thank you for taking some time out to talk with us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You bet. Well, what a series it has been. 3-2 has been the score for all three games between your hockey club and the St. James Junior Canucks, the two-time defending champions. Maybe just as a general overview, Braden, before we start to talk about each game individually, how has the series been as good as those three scores would indicate?
Yeah, it's been, I think, everything imagined going into the series. We knew it was going to be tight and intense, and yeah, all three games could go either way, and you know, it's just whoever capitalizes on a bounce here and there. But yeah, they've been pretty well going down exactly how you expected them to be.
You know, and it was kind of interesting because both your team and St. James had been able to, get through the first two rounds with little or no adversity, going 8-0. So I guess, the response of each club on a game-to-game basis has had to be pretty significant in this matchup.
Yeah, and, the pressure was on us. We've seen St. James got through their series against Charleswood, and we had one more game against St. Boniface, and we knew the pressure was on because we didn't want to drag anything out longer than we had to if we were going to advance and play them. And, it got to the point where somebody had to lose, and, it's just a great series so far.
Okay, so let's go at it on a game-by-game basis then. You have to open at the Ab McDonald in St. James. You just mentioned, the Junior Canucks, they are star-studded. They've won back-to-back league championships. They've rolled over the competition during the regular season schedule through the 45 games. But you go into the Ab McDonald and take that early lead. I would imagine that was the difference in game one.
Yeah, and that's a hard arena to show up to and to get a win, especially against that team on their home ice. And, to open it up game one and kind of keep the tracks moving from where we started, it was a good sign, early indicator that, we can play with them. They're not going to run over us.
And then you get game two in your barn. You come out and at least statistically, territorially dominate the first period, and yet you find yourself down 3-1.
Yeah, it's just, one of those games, and it's something we try to prepare our guys for, that you can play a really good game, and especially in the playoffs, you can play good games and still lose. And, you know, that's what we felt like at home. We came out and we played a very good game and lost. And, you know, it's just handling the emotions and the adversity on that and to try to keep things going.
Okay, and then that brings us to game three. Just the other night, Tuesday night, back at the Ab McDonald in St. James. And this one is decided in overtime. And also, you made a switch of goaltenders. What was the rationale behind that, Braden?
You know, we've been, since December, we've been rocking two goalies all year. And through playoffs, back and forth. And, you know, we got really good goalies. And the thing about our team is depth. You know, we've got four lines that go and 6D that go and two goalies that go. So we're going to use both of them in the playoffs and keep them fresh. And, you know, we trust both of them, and both of them give us a chance to win every given night. So that's the thought behind that.
Yeah. Well, and let's give those goaltenders a name, Owen LaRocque and Logan Enns. Noah Gilbert has been the flamethrower for the St. James Junior Canucks now for the last 3 years. It looks like the goaltending has been absolutely superb in this series. Braden, would that be true?
Yeah, I mean, we know he's a good goaltender. We know he got goaltending. I think both teams are just, you know, trying to find ways to score, and we knew it was going to be a low scoring series. And you know, that's the way we coached all year. We don't want many goals against. We want to win low scoring games, and that's how it reflects in playoffs. And we did a good job getting here, and now we just got to try find a way to get the extra goal in this series and come out ahead.
Yeah, was that kind of your meal ticket during the regular season? Was your team defense?
Yeah, 100%. And it's just keep pucks outside. You know, we Twister hockey. We don't want to see, you know, 6-5 games, 7-5 games. We want to see the 3-2s, the 2-1 wins, and you know, I think that translates to winning teams and translates to winning playoffs.
So the interesting thing here for you, of course, is you're a former Twister player, and I'm trying to remember, in 2019, did you guys win the championship when you were still playing, Braden?
18-19, yep, it was last year.
Yeah, so how much of that experience has helped you navigate through the lows and the highs and the everything in betweens? Because it's one thing as a player, I think you feel more in control of what's going on than when you're behind the bench.
Oh, 100%. You know, sometimes, you know, being a former player and still thinking you're young and coming back to the league, you want to get out on the ice a little bit more. And sometimes you just, you feel helpless and you want to get out there. But I know as much as emotions go, you know, when we won it, we were never really ahead in the series. You know, we went down 3-2, and then we had to win game 6, and then we had to win game 7 down 4-0. So it's just always showing that it's never over till it's over. And going through that as a player and now as a coach, you just trying to use that as an example to show your team it's not over till somebody wins 4 games. You know, they might have got the overtime winner in game 3 to go up ahead 2-1, but you know, we're still in it, right? We're going home. We got a great opportunity Saturday to tie it, even it up, and, you know, don't let your emotions get the best of you.
Yeah, Ross Levitan and I were talking about that on the Jets postgame show last night. I can only imagine how packed the Morris Rec Center is going to be tomorrow night.
Yeah, it'll be a good one. And, you know, the game 2 is fabulous, and every game in St. James 2 is packed. It just brings a completely different atmosphere, and, you know, you just try do your best to, you know, get your players to embrace the emotions of the game, the adversity of the game, you know, the crowd and everything around it, and, you know, soak it all in, because it's not something every player gets to experience. So, you know, soak it all in when it's there, and, you know, embrace the opportunity.
Yeah, I've had the great pleasure to serve as the master of ceremonies for a number of Manitoba Major Junior Hockey League season-end award banquets. And I am just always taken away, Braden, by the dedication and the commitment of the people in the league. As 2023-24, I know it's not over. We're still talking about the championship series halfway through, but even at this stage, has it been a pretty good year for the league?
Yeah, you know, I think this league is amazing. You know, I went through it all, and it's very good hockey. It's great hockey, and I think that gets overlooked a lot. You get the opportunity to go to school, and, get your degree and you get on well on your pace in life and your job, and then on top of that you get to play such great hockey and, you know, go through it all, and, you know, when you're done, it just teaches you so many good life lessons, and the league is just, it's great.
When you look back at 22-year-old or 21-year-old Braden Bearnarts in 2019 competing for a championship, and now 27 or 28-year-old Braden Bearnarts, and here you are, a coach and GM of a team that's vying for a championship, did you ever think you'd be behind the bench at this stage in your life back when you were at the tail end of your MMJHL career?
Definitely behind the bench at this level, probably not, you know. It was coaching something I wanted to do as soon as it was over, and, you know, I really enjoyed it, and I tried senior hockey for a few years, and at the end of the day, I loved coaching, and then I got the opportunity to coach the Twisters, the former team I was on, and, you know, it's just been spectacular at this level, to coach this level, and to be where we're at right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, as you just mentioned, the difference between winning and losing has been pretty marginal at best in this series. So hopefully it goes, six or even seven games, and more and more people get a chance to come out and watch the excellent hockey that's being played. Thanks a bunch for doing this, and we'll look forward to a great game four tomorrow night in Morris.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
You have Braden Bearnarts, who's the coach and general manager of the Pembina Valley Twisters, trailing the St. James Junior Canucks 2-1 in what has been just an outstanding series so far to decide the Jack McKenzie Trophy. Mr. Jeremy Keeler of the Golf Journalists Association of Canada. He is also the tireless caddy master for the Manitoba Open. Yeah, just a great resource to talk golf with. Jeremy, thanks a bunch for spending part of your Friday night with me.
I wouldn't have it any other way. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Well, let's talk a little bit about that second round of the Masters. 3-way tie for the lead. Bryson DeChambeau, who had the lead outright after round one, but he has company now with Scottie Scheffler, which isn't a surprise. I don't know, is it even a surprise that Max Homa is also sitting there at 6-under?
If you follow golf, not really. Max Homa has been playing better and better, winning some bigger tournaments. And he's coming to his own. He's famous for during COVID for roasting people's swings and for doing all that stuff. But now, instead of his social media doing the talking, he's actually doing the playing. He's always been a good golfer. I think now just he has the confidence and some of the experience from the week to week grind. And yeah, he's positioned himself to at least give himself a good chance for his first major.
Yeah, and, you know, after a somewhat forgiving day yesterday where, you know, there were quite a few scores in the red, Augusta National bared its teeth today, didn't it?
Yeah, the wind, there was actually a wind warning for Augusta this afternoon. So that will give you an idea how well or how strong the wind was. Normally you'll have a couple players go low. There was only one round under 70 today. That's how tough Augusta played. And I mean, Augusta, when it first was built, was on a peach farm and it was wide open. And over the years, they've planted the trees and basically created wind slots and made the wind swirl to keep the players on their toes. And today, I don't know if anybody who played today has ever played in those conditions in a tournament round at Augusta.
Ludvig Åberg, that only sub-70 round. Wasn't he the guy whose club head flew off the shaft just last weekend?
Yeah, the adapter screw sheared off. I've been building clubs and dealing with clubs for many years now. I'm a gear junkie myself, and I have actually never, ever seen that, even from the long hitters. So that's just a freak thing, but it didn't faze them. They got him a new head, you got a new head and obviously a new screw on there, and it's working well.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are people after what you just described from COVID that would think maybe Ludvig had a screw, but Max Homa had a screw loose or two. But let's talk a little bit about that second round, because it was such a great afternoon. I mean, you'd see, Homa and Scheffler climb into a tie, and then DeChambeau would come up with, a birdie or two to give himself a little bit of wiggle room. but then he ran into that bogey on 18. How did you see that round play out with those three guys in particular?
Well, with DeChambeau and Scheffler, both of those guys can absolutely annihilate a golf ball. DeChambeau, there for a while, went basically on a bodybuilding kick, and so the difference between DeChambeau and Scheffler is DeChambeau had a really good control of his driver, especially in the wind, which for someone who's hitting it 340, 350, the fact that they could control their ball flight and keep it out of the wind, or at least prevent the wind from doing too much with it, was amazing. Same with Scheffler. Scheffler had a few wild shots too, but didn't leave him in bad spots, and Homa just plotted his way around. Didn't get too excited, didn't get too down, and was steady Eddie, as they say. It was pretty impressive to watch Max play as well as he did in front of his idol. He is a huge Tiger Woods fan. He's made no bones about it that he absolutely loves playing with Tiger, and that he's a spectator there, and shooting six under at Augusta in those conditions in front of the GOAT. That's pretty cool. That's something that he's going to remember for the rest of his life.
Yeah, bucket list item. Ticked off for sure.
For a pro.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Hey, so while you mentioned Tiger's name, I was going to bring him up a little later on in the conversation, but we might as well talk about him now. I know because of the delay yesterday, Jeremy, that there was some thought how Tiger Woods would handle having to play 23 holes today. I'd say he did not too badly. I mean, what is he, one over after 36 holes?
Yeah, he's tied for 22nd. He actually shot better today than he did yesterday. And when you think about the conditions being worse today, that's a testament on how well he played for the 23 holes. There was a lot of people, there was some banter out there that, or some of the pundits were questioning if he would have to withdraw, you know, and especially if he was going to be around the cut. And he proved everybody wrong. He managed his misses really well. He didn't hit some of the greatest shots, but he was still able to get up and down. And he knew, because with his experience, he knew where to miss. And so that if he was going to make a mistake, he was going to make a mistake in the right place. I know that doesn't sound correct, but that's golf.
No, it certainly is. Let's look at the Canadians here before we come back for maybe a general overview of what we're expecting for the final 36 holes. Not a surprise that Corey Connors is the top Canadian, tied for 24th. But before we get to Corey, I have to ask you about Nick Taylor. I mean, there was a lot of expectation for Nick going into this tournament after, you know, what he's done over the last 18 months or so. Was it just the win that got him? Because he didn't have a particularly great day yesterday either.
It's hard to say. It could be the conditions. I mean, he was, you know, second last. It could be just his expectations were so high. He also could be battling something. I don't really know what would cause that.
Yeah.
Nick Taylor, I mean, coming off the winning the Canadian Open, he might have put too much pressure on himself. And sometimes, you know, that's the worst enemy. The worst thing you can do for yourself, especially in a major, is to make your expectations through the roof.
Yeah, of course, Mike Weir did not make the cut either at 7 over. Yeah. But Adam Hadwin and Corey Connors will play weekend golf. And I think it says something about Canadian golf that we're not, making that big of a deal out of it. It's expected that those guys would be there. Is 9 strokes back too big of a hill to climb for Corey?
Corey Connors has tremendous ball striking.
Yeah.
If between him and Hadwin, if there was one to make a run, I would see Connors doing it, especially on Sunday. He can plot his way around the course. He still gets it out there a fair distance, but his ball striking is really good. And so with the conditions, the wind getting down, I can see him, you know, shooting a 65, 64 on Saturday to put himself back in the mix.
Yep. And I should mention an 8-stroke differential for him. It's 6-under that's the leading score. I've had 7-under on the brain because for so long DeChambeau was sitting at that, but 8-stroke differential. Yeah, sorry to interrupt, Jeremy.
No, and it's good to see that both Hadwin and Connors made the cut. I was kind of hoping for Weir to pull it out there. Mm-hmm. It would have been really, really good to see Weir make it. But, he just missed by one, which is unfortunate. He had a couple of good opportunities to do it, and he's probably going to be kicking himself for the next couple of weeks.
So beyond the three co-leaders, Max Homa, Bryson DeChambeau, and Scottie Scheffler, you know, you've got young Nikolai Helgaard, who's only 2 strokes back. Some familiar names, Cam Davis, Colin Morikawa, is there anybody that fits into that dark horse category for you, Jeremy, that, could take a run at the big three right now?
There's a New Zealand golfer by the name of Ryan Fox. He's T8 right now. I think he's T8.
He has tied for 8th.
1-under, and he's another one who can doesn't give a care in the world. Hits the ball an absolute mile, and I could see him being a surprise player, especially with now that he's endured the first 2 days of the crazy conditions. The other one I kind of like is Cameron Young, but I don't know if he's as much of a dark horse as Fox, because Fox is still relatively unknown to most North American golf fans.
Yeah, and sorry, who was the other name that you were talking about?
Young. Cameron Young. Yeah, he's another really good golfer, but he's played well in some big events.
Yeah.
Where Ryan Fox is still relatively new to this type of attention.
Right on, yeah. And of course, there's going to be the sentimentality that surrounds Tiger, for everything that he has done for golf, and the fact that he's been able to make the cut again at the Masters, in light of everything that he's gone through, I think pretty much, says everything that needs to be.
24 consecutive cuts made when he's actually entered the tournament. That's a new record by far, and it just cements him as being
the GOAT.
probably the greatest of all time. I no disrespect to Mr. Nicklaus.
No.
But what he's done is absolutely amazing. And the fact that he's almost top 20 and he's in it still is mind-boggling.
Absolutely. Hey, I know it's late August, so we will have plenty of time to get you on well in advance with your other role, of course, as the caddy master for the Manitoba Open, to talk about that as well. But Jeremy, really appreciate your insight tonight on the first 36 holes of the Masters.
I appreciate it, and it's going to make some good viewing on the weekend.
Yes, it certainly is. There are going to be a lot of couch potatoes with that remote in their hand, although I don't know how much they'll be using the remote to get away from the Masters, because, of course, a lot of it is commercial-free as well. Jeremy Keeler, who is from the Golf Journalists Association of Canada, he's the secretary for that group and also the caddy master for the Manitoba Open, lives, dies, eats, breathes everything golf. So that's why we call upon him when we want some expert opinion.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.